Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namāsāmi. Well, by the Western calendar, this day is the end of 2014 and last day of this year, the dying breath of this year. Such occasions as this are good opportunities also to consider that the time is really just a convention. The official Buddhist year, according to the Thai calendar, the new year is the day after the full moon at the end of the rainy season. So that's in November. So that was the beginning of 2558, was a couple of months ago. And Chinese New Year is the new moon of February. So New Year is still to come in the Chinese New Year. Jewish New Year, Muslim New Year. Yeah. But according to the calendar of most countries and the most of us work to, this is a significant day, a significant occasion. And without any illusion that it's the real New Year, but just that it's our convention, our agreement as a human group all around the world, we can take this as an opportunity to consider and to look back and to also set intentions for the future. These are the usual ancient customs for the turning of a year or the completion of a cycle. And these are very useful, valuable traditions also. We have the customs in the Western world of New Year's resolutions, and these are very skillful and beneficial, and they exist, they carry on because people have seen the value of those. When the Buddha talked about how to be successful in life, how to say achieve anything, part of the process of success or succeeding, doing well with anything, is a quality called vimamsa, or reviewing. So to look back at the results of what we've done, the choices that we've made. So here we are at the end of 2014, and this is a ideal opportunity to look back and to see the effects of the choices we've made. And often when we speak in this way, the mind immediately assumes that we're talking about all the things that we've done wrong. And that's something that's part of it. So as we look back over the last 12 months and consider, you know, what were the things that I said that were cruel and selfish? What were the things that I did that took advantage of other people or that were really unskillful, unwholesome? You know, what were the times when, you know, we hurt somebody's feelings and we really enjoyed it? you know, that goes completely against our ideal of how we could and should be, that we make somebody unhappy and something in our heart goes, good. I'm glad he's miserable. That even ugly and unskillful states of mind, they arise within us. So it's a good opportunity to look back over the year and to see, well, what were those words that I spoke, those actions that I took, that were hurtful, harmful to others, that caused difficulty and pain. Not to create a negative self-image, to cause ourselves to feel self-criticism and blame. Like, you know, I'm an awful person, I'm bad, I have created a whole slew of bad karma. We're not doing this in order to feed a negative image of self-view, or to say frighten ourselves with all of the punishments that we're going to receive because of unwholesome action. But rather, that quality of vimamsa, of reviewing, of looking, is to just acknowledge, you know, oh, this is the cause, this is the effect. Because I spoke in that way that was hurtful, that was, say, looking down on someone, or was critical, making fun of somebody, or that someone was upset and I enjoyed it, and, you know, took a hold of that, to work with that skillfully. The Buddha said over and over again, in terms of how we use the process of looking at our actions, say, to see our wrongdoings as such, and to endeavor to do better in the future, then this is called development. This is called furtherance in the Buddha Sasana. So this is the spirit of that, to look at where we've been unskillful, where we've been lazy or greedy or selfish, deceitful, the whole list of akusala kammas, the whole list of unskillful actions, and to acknowledge, yeah, that was poorly done, that was really greedy, or that was deceitful, and then, just by recognizing the cause, then look at the effect. Okay, now when I remember having done that, when I remember having said those words or been showing favoritism in some way, being biased or being self-centered, how does it feel? What's the feeling in the heart? When I remember that action, when I remember having spoken in that way, how does it feel? And so it's difficult to do this, particularly when things are emotionally loaded, emotionally charged. It's very easy to create self-view around that, to say, oh, I'm an awful person, oh, I'm so terrible, oh, what will they think of me, or, oh dear, that was such a big argument, and they hate me, and how am I ever going to fix that, and the habits of our thinking tend to move towards self-view, I and me and mine. But this process of reviewing and considering our actions is not about creating a stronger sense of self, but rather freeing the heart from that and helping to guide ourselves towards more skillful action. So by looking at the unskillful actions, and people ask about this area of practice over and over, and I always try to say, describe what I do myself and how I feel is the most skillful way to work with it, which is to say, when you consider some kind of harmful action, where you've been deceitful or cruel or greedy or selfish, to bring that to mind, to just let yourself feel the painfulness of that, and to keep it almost as wordless as possible, to just keep it as non-conceptual wordless as possible. So when I remember having spoken in a way that was sort of making fun of somebody or being cruel or being deceitful, that when I bring that to mind, then there's that painful feeling. And the best thing to do is just to stay with that feeling of, ow, ow, that hurts. Just as if acknowledging physical pain. We don't have to create a story about it. We don't have to write a whole commentary. But just, ow, that hurts. This is painful. To remember that it hurts, it stings. There's an ache, a pain in the heart. When we relate to our action and seeing the effects of it in this way, then what I find is that the more wordless and the more direct that appreciation of the painful results of unskillful action is, the more direct, the more simple, then the more completely we are encouraged, the more fully we are encouraged to not do that again, to let go, because that simple acknowledgement and receiving of the painful feeling, that's what teaches us more effectively than a theory in the mind carrying around a concept. But as Lumpur Cha said, it's only when we experience the pain of attachment that we will let go. Until we really experience, acknowledge that painfulness, then we don't let go. So that in looking back over the year and reviewing those unskillful things that we've done, it's a challenge to not, say, make ourselves feel, say, more critical or negative, or create a stronger sense of self-view. But if instead we just learn to recognize the relationship of cause and effect, and we don't build it into a personality, and we don't create the feelings of I and me and mine around that, then what we're able to do is to see, oh, because of that action, there is this painful feeling. Ow! it's a very simple way of, say, observing nature, of feeling the way nature is. It's not personal. We're not building an ego or a sense of I and me and mind around it. But we're able to simply recognize, because of this cause, there is this effect. Aha, that's how it works. And then that acknowledgement of the painful quality of it, and really feeling the painful quality of it, that's what teaches us. That's what helps us on the most basic and instinctual level, the most complete level, incline away, to lean away from acting in that fashion in the future. So then the partner of this, of reviewing, is not just to look at our negative actions, but also at the end of this year, taking this time, this opportunity, as the year fades, to consider, what good have I done? In the West, we tend to dwell a lot on our mistakes and faults and problems. That's a strong cultural conditioning that we have. But also, I can guarantee that everybody here has done a lot of good things during the course of the year as well. Yeah, even though our attention might go to the negative or the obstructive things, if we look, we will consider that we also have done a lot of wholesome, beautiful things. Now, again, the conditioning of the West is to say, and in the Judeo-Christian, particularly in Christian conditioning, is to say, to dismiss or to ignore any, your good actions. You don't want to think anything good about yourself because you don't want to be proud. You don't want to feed the feeling of conceit or being thinking of yourself as special or pure or good. And so the habit is to push those things away. But it's important to recognize that if we weren't good-hearted people, and obviously not everybody is gathered here at Amravati this evening, but the kind of people that want to come and spend New Year's Eve in a Buddhist monastery, sitting, practicing meditation, spreading loving kindness, and avoiding the drunken revelries. Maybe some of you are planning some drunken revelries after the Dhamma talk. I don't know, but I will not. I'm not reading anybody's mind, so don't. If you suddenly have an anxious feeling, he knows. Yeah, I don't. I'm just guessing. Yeah. But we can unconsciously push away and not acknowledge the wholesome and beautiful qualities that are here. Those of you who've listened to many of Lumpo Sumedho's Dhamma talks over the years will have heard him speak about this, and how particularly this sense of self-criticism and negative self-view has been a very strong habit in him. He had a very devoted Christian family he grew up in, and was quite a devout, committed Christian as a young person. And so that conditioning was very strong in him. And he often would refer in his Dhamma talks about a time when he was a young monk and going to Ajahn Chah and saying to Lumpo Cha, "Oh, Lumpo, I feel so, you know, I'm such a terrible person. You know, I sit here in meditation and my mind is filled with thoughts of anger and hatred. And, you know, I hate my parents and I hate the other monks, and I hate Thailand, and I hate the ants, and I hate the mosquitoes, and I'm so full of, you know, restlessness and negativity, and, you know, I'm a really, really awful person. You know, that my mind is just poisonous, filled with all this, you know, negative and angry feelings, and qualities." That I'm sure I'm just polluting the atmosphere here. I'm ruining everything for the other monks. You know, I'm really an awful monk, because I'm just sitting here feeling like I'm generating more and more negative feelings and emotions, and I have a lot of doubts whether it's really worth my while, whether I should really be here, because I'm sure I'm just creating more negative karma, having all these awful, destructive and hurtful thoughts about everybody. And and he was astonished when Lumpo Cha said to him, "Sumedho, does it ever occur to you that if you were really as bad as you think you are, you would never come anywhere near a Buddhist monastery? If you were really as bad and rotten and as evil as you take yourself to be, as soon as you saw a Buddhist monk, you would run a mile. You wouldn't want to be around anybody who keeps the precepts. You wouldn't want to be around anyone who even thinks about doing good, you know. But yet you do. You know, you love goodness. You love to be around people who keep the precepts. You love to be around people who practice meditation. You have a lot of respect for the teaching and for me. So where does that come from? If you were such an awful, evil person, you know, you couldn't possibly think in this way. You wouldn't be attracted to being in a monastery. You wouldn't be attracted. You wouldn't want to be around here at all, let alone be a Buddhist monk living here at Wat Pa Phong." And he suddenly realized, well, yeah, I guess that's true. And then, even more astonishing than to him, Lumpo Cha suggested, "You know, Sumedho, you should contemplate your own goodness. You should reflect upon your own goodness and make that an object of meditation and reflection. And when Lumbhorcha said that to him, he said it was just like his mind just went into this big, what? Contemplate my own goodness? What? And just astonished at the idea. And Lumbhorcha said, yeah, you know, that of the different kinds of contemplation that the Buddha suggested, along with contemplations of, say, the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, or contemplation of death and such like, along with Buddhanusati, Dhammanusati, Maranusati, and so on, the Buddha also encouraged Chaganusati, to contemplate your own goodness. And this was a really revolutionary concept to the young Lumpur Sumedho, because his conditioning was around, well, you can't do that. It would just make you proud and conceited and think that you're so much better than everybody else. It's like, you can't do that's not right. You can't do that. But then having Lumbhorcha looking him straight in the face and saying, this is a good idea, Sumedho. Yeah. Contemplate your own goodness. And so I often talk about this because it's for many Western people in particular, it's a very revolutionary concept to think about your own goodness, not to make yourself conceited or proud or think that you're better than other people, but just to recognize that act of patience, letting somebody else go first, doing a task for someone else because you want to lend a hand, offering a kind word, restrained in when you had an opportunity to be greedy, to help yourself, to be looking after your own particular desires or preferences, and putting them aside. If we consider and look back over the year, rather than the whole year being, the significant events of the year just being all the things I did wrong, those days in the calendar with a big, big a big X on them of where we really blew it and messed up. If we reshape the calendar and think, okay, what were the days when I acted with patience? What were the days when I volunteered to help out and to support others? I mean, what were the days when I looked after somebody else's concerns? Well, what were the days when I was ready to sit still, be quiet, and to be patient with discomfort, or to not speak out, and to not make some kind of clever or nasty remark, when all the days when I didn't choose to tease somebody or say something hurtful. Now, when it takes a bit of effort to put your mind onto that and to think in that direction in an active way. But I would suggest it's a really useful thing to do, just to think back through the year, think back through your days, and just to make a little list in the course of time, what good things have you done? And also how difficult it can be to remember, and how we ignore those thousands of kind and generous, noble acts, those thousands of acts of restraint and patience that we don't make much of, but yet they are all kusala kamma, they are all wholesome, noble qualities. So when we talk about punya, the word punya, or bun in Thai, punya in Pali, we translate as blessings or as merit. That quality of punya is the brightness of heart that comes from kusala kamma, from acting in skillful ways. It's that bright, joyful, free quality of the heart that is the natural result of skillful action. If we only ever dwell and look at the unskillful, then we can, in a way, be missing or ignoring the punya that's there. We say focusing too much and too insistently on the negative, and so it can be like you've got some really good investments, and they're earning a lot of interest, and the cash is piling up, but you're just never looking at that account. You're not checking that account. And instead, you look at the one where all the expenses are leaking out through all of your harsh words or your spiteful actions, and that the negative or the unskillful. But to recognize the punya that we create is a skillful practice. This is, the Buddha recommended this, to consider your own chaga, your own generosity. Again, it's you're not doing this in order to inflate self-view. We're not trying to say, look at me, I'm all these wonderful things that I do, I'm such a special person, I'm so good, I'm so kind, I'm so wonderful, look at me. That would be, say, the wrong kind of contemplation. They're just feeding a quality of self-view in a destructive way, but rather just to acknowledge that action was kind. If somebody else had done it, you'd say, "Well, how fine, how admirable, what a beautiful thing to have done." Yeah, that person is very impressive, inspiring. It's beautiful to act in that way. And that it can be you that is that person. It's your actions, your speech, your attitudes that can be recognized as being noble, as being wholesome, as being inspiring in that way. So as we look back over the year, then it's useful to consider those wholesome and beautiful actions. And in exactly the same way, rather than creating a whole big story about that, of like, "Oh, that was so good," or "That was a wonderful thing," or "I should do more of that," and again, not creating too much of a story or a narrative, too many ideas around it, but just recognizing, "Oh, that was that act of patience. That was very beautiful. That was very noble. How does that feel? Ah." Yeah, that act of generosity, that act of patience, how does that feel? Huh. And just to let that glow in the heart be fully acknowledged, just as you acknowledge the "ow" of unskillful action, just to acknowledge the "ah." That brightness, that glow in the heart that comes from wholesome action. And in exactly the same way, the less words we use around it, the more deeply effective that is, that anusati, contemplation is in a way more complete the less words there are involved. Because just feeling that brightness, knowing that brightness, "Oh, this is punya. Ah, very nice." And that the natural, attractive, and wholesome, and worthy quality of that is obvious. It speaks for itself. You don't have to make a description of it. It speaks for itself. So then, as we review the year that's gone by, then it's also at the end of the year a good opportunity to, in a sense, wrap that up, to recognize the things that are wholesome and beautiful and let them go, not claim them or carry them around and say, "Oh, I've created all this good karma, I'm definitely going to heaven when I die." Yeah, many people who come here asking for blessings or making offerings, there's a certain, what you can call, fire insurance element to it. Wanted to kind of book a ticket to to the heavenly realms and avoid the hot and nasty realms down below, which is, you know, part of the, you know, the natural human folk beliefs of not just Buddhist countries but around the world. But if we're going to be most to use the contemplations of good and bad karma most effectively, then it's, as I was saying, it's important to be consciously letting go of self-view around that, not creating the idea, this is the good that I've done or the bad that I've done, but just to instead to be seeing it in terms of cause and effect. Wholesome action leads to this, unwholesome action leads to that, and a conscious letting go. In the past, on these New Year's Eve and New Year's Eve gatherings, some different places we have a bonfire, some kind of a gathering outdoors with a fire pit and a bonfire, and during the evening, I would invite people to reflect on the year that's gone by, and the year that's coming, and to consider, and to make to write down on a piece of paper, all the things that you regret, all the things that you're happy with, and all the things that you fear, and all the things that you desire. It might be a long list, but you can. But to make a little list, and then at midnight, then go out, you light the bonfire, and then throw all of the regrets and appreciations and hopes and fears, throw them all into the fire. So, both clarifying what these are and also letting go of them. And that letting go, tossing them into the fire, is a way of expressing that intention to not make things personal, not to grasp or identify with what has been done, and also what the mind looks forward to. You can also consider the custom that we have in the Buddhist world of asking for forgiveness. So at the end of the rains retreat, say at the Okpansa, the ending of the rains, on the full moon of October, and the rains retreat finishes, then everyone asks for forgiveness, and we have a little ritual exchange between the teacher and the community, or say at the ending of the winter retreat, and different times during the year, there's a formal exchange where or when people have been living in a monastery for some time and then they're taking leave to go and be somewhere else, we carry out this little ritual where a person comes and bows three times, and then they recite the words, Acharye Pamadena Dvaratayena Katang Sapang Aparatang Kamatame Bante, which means, I ask for the attention of the elder, and for I ask for forgiveness for whatever has been done through the three doors of body, speech, or mind, that has been hurtful or unskillful. Please forgive me for those actions. And so, whatever has been done by body, speech, or mind, intentionally or unintentionally, that's been hurtful, we ask for forgiveness. And then the elder, the teacher, then says, I forgive you, and aham kamami tumhe pime kimitabang. I forgive you, and please forgive me also. So this is like a formal exchange that we have, a ritual exchange of wiping the slate clean after you've been spending time together with someone or with a group of people. It's a way of recognizing that we make mistakes, we hurt each other's feelings, we annoy each other in various different ways through the things that we do, the things that we say, the way that we hold each other in our thoughts, and there's necessarily, when we spend time with each other, there's going to be friction, difficulty, And so this is a tradition, a ritual established by the Buddha to help us to, say, achieve a quality of harmony as a human group. So we do this as a ritual when we part company from others and we take leave of an elder. But this is also something that you can do by yourself in relationship to the year that's gone by. And so that you can reflect, and I would encourage this something that we can do to consider, you know, whatever I've done through body, speech, or mind during the last year that was unskillful or hurtful to others that I know about or that I don't know about, because there might have been things that we know that we were upsetting to others, you know, things that we did or said. It's been made very clear to us that people were annoyed with us. They didn't like us. They're irritated and fed up with us, and they made it very clear that we were annoying. But other times we have no idea. We have no clue that we've upset others. So just in a way of clearing the slate and letting go of all the actions, negative actions of the past year, we can use that same kind of a formula internally, you know, and to consider whatever I've done, anything that I've done through body, speech, or mind that has been hurtful to others and caused anybody pain to other people, other creatures, all beings everywhere, then to ask for that forgiveness, to acknowledge that we regret that our actions, our way of being has caused pain, and then to carry that through in terms of recognizing, well, I regret that I've caused this pain, and I'll endeavor to do better in the future. And also, In the ritual, the elder says, "Ahang kamami tumhei pime kimittabang." I forgive you, and please forgive me. Also, you can consider that. Again, it's up to you how you use your own imagination, but you can consider that there's the voice of nature itself that will say, "Yes, I forgive you." that Mother Nature herself, the whole universe, is happy to absorb all of your unwholesome actions, your neutral actions, and your wholesome actions. To forgive, to recognize that, as human beings, we're not perfect all the time, and that's the way it goes. And to let it all just be dissolved into the ocean of Mother Nature's universe, just to let it all go, let it dissolve into the field, the ocean of nature, and let it go, let it be carried away. Yeah, you can also consider, like, well, within 10 years' time, 100 years' time, 1,000 years' time, 10,000 years' time, these actions that I feel such regret about, or I feel embarrassed about, These will all have been washed away. If not in 5 years, in 10 years. If not in 10 years, 100 years. If not in 100 years, in 1,000 years. If not in 1,000 years, at least in 100,000 years, these definitely will have been washed away and lost in the oceans of change as the great currents of time pass by. So these are ways of using our imagination to let go, to leave things alone, and to just allow the past to be gone. As the Buddha said in many of his teachings, just let the past be. Leave the past alone. Don't dwell upon the past. And that this ending of the year and this, closing of 2014 and the beginning of the new year is a good opportunity just to let it go. Okay, all that's been harmful and stupid and regrettable, it's acknowledged, we do our best to learn from it. Okay, now it's gone. Just leave it be. Let it dissolve into the great ocean. There's no need to carry it around anymore. Let the past be. Then, and having considered the past and having seen where we've made mistakes, and also seeing where we've created blessings, then that's what we learn from. So the things that are positive and beautiful in terms of forming resolutions for the coming year, those things that when we've brought them to mind, there's that glow, and to say, okay, well, when I did that, or when I think of that, there's this great refreshment and this glow, this warmth in the heart. Well, okay, learn from that. So those are the things that have really brought brightness and gladness and joy to the heart. Okay, do more. Remember that. Bring that to mind. That there's goodness there. There's richness and joy there. Do more of that. Set the intention to bring more of that into being. And then the things where you see that you've caused pain for yourself and others, then recognize that. To say, okay, I really, that's where I really lost it. I have a really bad habit there that keeps repeating itself. Okay, that needs some attention. Now, when we create New Year's resolutions, I'm very familiar with this kind of process myself, where you say, okay, never again. This is it. Definitely. I've totally blown it there. It's a really awful habit. Right. New year, new commitment. You know, right. From now on, never again. And we can, it's not difficult to make these radical and very clear assertions. And in an inspired moment, it's really obvious. Like, yeah, that's a really unskillful habit. I definitely see that's awful. I don't want to carry that on. This is harmful to me and other people. And it's definitely something that's got to stop. Okay, from now on, no more. That's it. Is this familiar? And whether it's giving up smoking or giving up, swearing or giving up cheesecake or pornography or going to the racetrack or playing endless computer games or watching soap operas, or, we all have our own particular sort of sense desire objects, but also it can be any of the various different things the mind gets caught up in, whether it's a habit of complaining. It's not like it's chasing a desire object like chocolate cakes or whatever, but if you recognize that you're always complaining, that your mind always goes to criticizing and finding fault with other people, do you see that every time a conversation starts, within a minute, I've made some nasty remark about somebody, usually about somebody who's not there. I'm just, if you think I'm reading your mind, please, be reassured I'm not. This is a random example. So we see that that's an unskillful habit. Okay, I'm not going to criticize other people. I'm going to give that up. This is a really awful and destructive, and I don't need to be this way. I'm going to stop it. And at that moment, it's absolutely clear. We see this is destructive. It's a stupid habit. And we don't need to do that. And at that moment, it's very obvious. No, no more, enough of this. I'm not going to do this again. But as we become very aware that the having a skillful intention doesn't just dissolve the habit. It's like I can have the intention to learn how to speak French, but the intention doesn't immediately result in being able to speak French. The intention is one thing, but the actuality is another. Carrying it through, or say, okay, I've had it with anger, no more anger. From now on, I'm not going to get angry. Is a skillful intention, but the intention is not enough to just bring about the actuality of that full-scale change. So what I see is really important then. It's good to set these New Year's resolutions and wholesome intentions, but we also have to be thinking through how do we create backup? How do we create the support system? Because just making a dramatic declaration on December 31st or January the 1st, okay, from now on, ta-da, that's it. I'm giving up the bottle. Yeah, no more smoking. No more soap operas. Yeah, no more complaining. Whatever it might be, that we also at the same time think, well, now how am I going to carry this through? And also, if I'm considering how to carry this through, how to sustain it, what are the things that make me fall into that habit? What are the circumstances that keep pulling my mind towards complaining? What makes me want to keep watching soap operas or smoking or watching pointless things, harmful things? So if we are really wanting to end our unskillful habits, you also have to look closely at the way the mind works with restlessness, with insecurity, with desire, to get to know the habits that are there. And so rather than just having a single declaration, and in a firm and clear way the new year, it's really important and useful to reflect and consider, now why do I lose it? What are the things that make me get carried away? What is my mood like when I get angry? What's causing me to say, oh well, just one more, or oh well, it's today's all right, or that or what they call the technical term for it, but where you've had one bite of a cake, so you might as well finish the entire cake. Set the ball rolling, so you might as well just finish the whole thing off. And to consider, now, what makes me get lost? What's my mood? What's my feeling that draws me into that? Yeah. And so this is the active use of contemplation and reflection. You have to study our own minds, study our own moods. And we realize, okay, well, if I'm feeling good, and this is just talking about myself, I might see, well, if I'm feeling content and secure and a strong sense of well-being, and my mind is bright and energetic, then none of those habits, unskillful habits, are a problem. It's never a difficulty. It's never a problem. It's never an issue. It's when I'm tired, or when I've been, intimidated, I feel sort of rattled by something, I'm under pressure, or I've been criticized, the system is a bit wobbly and a bit weakened, feeling insecure, then my mind wants to go to some unskillful object. Aha! Okay, so that's if you realize, I'm just using this as an example, if you recognize, okay, it's when I'm tired and rattled and unsettled, that's the dangerous moments. Okay, then notice that, flag that, put up a banner that says, be more attentive, pay close attention, because this is just exactly the time when you lose it. And so the conditions that support us maintaining those resolutions it's essential for us to know those. It's essential for us to understand what are the things that the conditions where we lose our mindfulness, we get pulled into the old unskillful habits. And the more that we can get familiar with that, the more we see, okay, this is a danger zone. Okay, this is the time to pay attention. Okay, it's when I've been criticized or someone has hurt my feelings in public, then I get very reactive. And so, okay, I've just been made fun of, someone's just being critical of me. Okay, now pay very close attention and say nothing because these are the prime conditions where I'm going to lose it. So if you are familiar with and get get to know the areas, the aspects of your mind that are most fragile, where you lose it most easily, you get drawn into bad habits, then you're giving yourself more of a chance to not get pulled into those unskillful habits. You know, okay, this is dangerous territory, drive carefully. You know, it's like if the fog's come down, okay, slow down, it's foggy, you can't see, this is dangerous, be careful. This is delicate territory, so you know, tread carefully. So if we are, that's one of the aspects of helping ourselves to keep these resolutions, to live more skillfully and to develop wholesome habits of action and speech, to see what are the conditions, what are the traits of mind where we most easily lose it. Also, if we have a particular commitment, okay, I want to break this habit of complaining or pursuing this unskillful desire, it's helpful, along with making a strong resolution at the beginning of the year, to say do that every day, every morning, say in the morning meditation, you just make a project of it. So that you say, okay, this is a year to work on this habit of unskillful speech. Okay, every morning during the morning meditation, say using this imaginary habit of complaining about everybody, criticizing others, just to set the intention every morning. If you have a quiet time for meditation each morning, just to take the opportunity, okay, during today, every time that my mind moves towards criticizing somebody else, notice that. As soon as I start to have that impulse to find fault with somebody, to complain about them, to criticize them, or to blame them, blame other people, then notice that. Catch the mind forming those thoughts, and then even if I've already started to speak in that way, stop. Even if it's in mid-sentence, stop. I don't need to speak that way. And so during today, set the intention to notice whenever the mind is creating those negative thoughts, to restrain that impulse to speak, and if that impulse has started, to stop, to not follow that through, to not feed that. So I've done this many, many times over the years with particular habits or practices, and it's astonishingly helpful. And it doesn't take a lot of effort, but it is remarkably effective. So it's making a habit, so in a sense, you're deliberately bringing that up every day. So, okay, this is the project. Whenever I experience this particular desire, or this particular aversion, or this particular selfish impulse, then notice it. Hang up a flag. Say, okay, that's what's happening. And then, if you set that clear, conscious intention at the beginning of the day, then as the day unfolds, and you're with your family or your work, and around the monastery or in your in the workplace, on the road, then when those mind states come up, then of course you're going to forget sometimes, and you're already halfway through a good rant, complaining about someone. You go, oh, dang! I just spent the last 10 minutes making fun of such and such a person, or complaining about someone being stupid and wrong. Ah, I lost it. But at least you know you lost it. And that having set that intention earlier in the day makes it easier to notice that you've lost it. And also the fact that, okay, that's gone against what I was intending. Okay, duly noted. Let's just feel, how does that sit in the heart right now? I'm recognizing I just spent the last 10 minutes complaining about someone. Now, how does that feel? And as I was saying before, just to let that be as wordless and direct as possible. Okay, now I wasn't going to do this, and I've just followed that the habit. How does it feel? Ow! Okay, this is why I don't want to follow those impulses, because it hurts, and it's also unskillful for others as well. Okay, duly noted, and then let that painfulness inform your actions in the future. So I highly recommend, in terms of establishing skillful resolutions for the coming year, to also be considering these elements of how to fulfill those resolutions, how to provide them with backup. So it's not just like a beautiful car that you see in the showroom, and then you know, wow, what a beautiful car, and you buy the car, and then you never put any petrol in it, so you can't drive it anywhere. It's like the New Year resolution is like a beautiful car, but then you need the fuel and also the owner's manual to actually look after the thing and to give it some juice so it can you can get places in it. And these other aspects of how to support those intentions, how to see where we get lost, and how to also, when we lose it, when we get distracted and we get carried away, how to apply those. And then this is a way that we can say fulfill or carry out those resolutions and help them to be fulfilled. The more refined aspect of that, just as I was mentioning before, is like if you are developing a lot of mindfulness of your thoughts, then rather than say, if you say, okay, I've got a bad habit of complaining about others, and you're particularly focusing on what you're saying, and you don't want to be complaining about others, you might think that then, okay, well, if it's all those negative thoughts are going on inside, then that's all right, or I don't need to worry about that. It's only if it leaks out into my speech, then it's a problem. But maybe the last thing to say on this is to suggest that it's even more helpful to be developing mindfulness around it as a mental activity. So when the mind is criticizing, oh, this person is really awful because of this, or that person is really stupid because of that, or I can't believe that, you know, she just said this, or he's always that way, and it's so annoying. To be similarly noticing those reactive thoughts as they are, and to be able to flag those even on an internal level. Oh, here's the mind, the thinking mind, criticizing this person, blaming that person. Yeah, and it, you know, it's obviously it's the same with feelings of desire, like being sexually attracted to other people, or say admiring others, or feeling jealous of others, or all the different mind states that and impulses that we can follow. But if we are ready to catch that, if we can develop the mindfulness to see those states happening internally. And to say, oh, that's that feeling of desire. The mind is labeling that person in terms of whether they're attractive or not. It's labeling that person as to whether they're annoying or not. Then just to be able to develop mindfulness around that judging process, and to say, oh, there it goes again. There's the judging mind. It's saying, this is awful, and that's desirable. Yeah, what about me? That intention, setting that intention each day, helps us to see those mind states, and then as they are seen, even those mental judgments, as they are seen, we can know, oh, this is just a judgment. That doesn't have to be believed in, it doesn't have to be followed. And then when those are followed, we experience painfulness, but when they are not followed, what we experience is that quality of brightness, that the punya, the joyfulness of heart. So if I feel, if I'm trying to work on, say, not complaining or criticizing others, and in that moment of recognizing, oh, here's my mind moaning about Ajahn Nyanarato. Oh, Ajahn Nyanarato, he's always like that. And if I catch that thought, oh, well, that's just a complaining thought. It's a thought. The thoughts arise and pass away. They're not self. It's just a complaining thought. That's all. There's no thing there. That moment of that thought being recognized as transparent, as empty, then in that moment the heart is freed from that. And then right there is the brightness, there is the quality of punya is manifest, is apparent. And that is equally important to recognize, oh look, when that's not followed, what the result is this quality of freedom, of brightness. Ah! And so that letting go of those impulses of criticism or desire and craving and so on, it's not just a negative thing that's not been followed, but we can see that when that is really abandoned, let go of, there's, it's not just an absence of something negative, but there's actually a sort of deeply positive and bright quality, brightness of heart is there, is present. And again, the more we are able to acknowledge that, oh, when that impulse is not followed and it's let go of, it feels like this. And then we're, again, leaving it as wordless as possible, we're able to recognize, oh, this is great. this is lovely. How sweet, how delightful, what beauty there is in the heart when this is that those negative impulses are not followed. And then that very brightness, that very wholesome and delightful quality attracts us, it encourages us, it inspires us. We don't have to, say, come up with an idea or to remind ourselves, oh, I should do that because that's what good Buddhists should do. But more, it's like the direct experience of that bright and liberating quality is what inspires and draws us. So these are a few reflections as the year draws to a close. And I would encourage those of you, if these make sense and are useful to you, to take these to heart and put them into practice. For the rest of the evening, it's now about 9:30. I would encourage people to, everyone who can stay for the rest of the evening up until midnight and the turning of the year, to use this as an opportunity to spread loving kindness to yourselves and to the world around us and to all beings, particularly as we approach midnight, the level of madness in the Greenwich Mean time zone is peaking. The kind of deluded dosa, loba, and moha, you know, greed, hatred, and delusion sort of peaks towards midnight. So it becomes more and more important to spread loving kindness, to be counterbalancing that, and to be gathering here, if you wish, those of you who can stay for the evening, particularly for the monastics, we'll begin the Paritta chanting at 11:30. And so then that last half hour of the calendar year of 2014, we'll be reciting the protective blessing chants of the Paritta, and then we'll finish at midnight, and I believe there'll be some... most years, we have hot chocolate and such like available in the sala after the midnight hour has come. So I'm assuming that's planned also for this evening. So those of you who can stay through tonight, and opportunity to cultivate loving kindness and be in good, wholesome company, avoiding alcoholic confusion, spreading loving kindness and compassion for all those who are filled with that, probably already, and then to welcome the new year in together with the Paritta up to midnight. Anyone?